You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast. Zoneradio.co.za. That's David Essex there and a track called The Silver Dream Machine. The reason why we played that is because The Silver Dream Machine is in the studio this afternoon. Steve Reed, how are you?
Richard, look who's talking.
No, I'm not even close. All right. It is in the Entrepreneur Zone, folks. Now, you remember 2 weeks ago where Steve started a conversation about silver trepreneur. What silver?
Silverpreneur.
Silverpreneurship. Here we go. And as a rule, he introduces the topic. 2 weeks after that, he brings somebody in who is an expert or a guest regarding that topic. And this afternoon, it is Ray Hawkinson. I hope I'm saying that correctly.
Absolutely,
Ray.
Absolutely correct.
And without any further ado, Steve, over to you.
Thank you, Richard.
By the way.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Great to have Ray in the studio with me. So last month, I wrote an article about the rise of the silverpreneur and then shared that 2 weeks ago here. And, of course, the silverpreneur, Ray, is those people who start a business in the second chapter of their lives. So we're aiming at those who are the age
Bodies.
Of about 50, 50 plus,
yes.
All right? And when I think of you, Ray, I think of one word.
60 plus.
That two words. I think of the word enthusiastic. You are one of the most enthusiastic people I know. But listeners, I thought it would be wonderful to hear his story. You'll see his authenticity. And hopefully you'll also see that, you know what, your second chapter, listeners, is possible.
Absolutely.
So, Ray, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. It's great to be with you guys today. And, I was born in what was Rhodesia, is now called Zimbabwe, back in 1955. Normally when I put that on a piece of paper, people look twice. It's like, 19 when? Anyway, yeah, so I was born there. And then obviously grew up there. I was born and bred there. I went to school there. And then I served in the Rhodesian Air Force. You know, I went straight from school into the Air Force, became a pilot, and fought during the war, you know, until it all changed in 1981. 1980 actually is when it changed to Zimbabwe. And we stayed a year after that, but the writing was on the wall for us, you know, as a family. There was stuff happening in the Air Force, so I thought it was time to move. And because my folks were originally from Cape Town, this was always, South Africa was always like second home to us. So we moved here in 81.
Okay.
And then I started all over again, Steve, at the age of 28, having been a pilot, and I played rugby.
Yes, tell us about the rugby.
Yeah, so when I was at school, I was always very sporty, you know, and I always thought I was going to be a first aid teacher. That's actually what I thought I was going to do after school. And then this Air Force officer convinced me to join the Air Force rather. So I took a different route to what I thought I was going to do. But rugby was always, and sport was always very important to me. And when I was at school, I made the Rhodesia school side, and then under 20 when I was in the Air Force. Then eventually played a few games for the Rhodesia senior side. Most of my games were actually in the B team. So rugby was a very big part of my life. And when I moved to South Africa, I got my first job because I was a rugby player. So I started at 28, started as a salesman. I'd never been in sales before. And kind of just took that on, and that's how I started my life in South Africa.
So fast forward to the age of 60.
Yes.
And you've had almost a couple of careers crammed into that 32 years.
Correct.
One of them, you and your wife ran a care center in Lesotho.
Correct.
For HIV/AIDS babies. And you pioneered that and ran that for 10 years.
Correct.
But then along came the 60-year-old and you were unemployed.
Yeah.
At so-called retirement age.
Yeah.
And then you speak of a friend,
yes,
that we both know, and he's a life coach.
Yes.
And you thought coaching. yeah, you know, that sounds great. Let me find out from him whether whether I should become a coach. Now, tell us what happened.
Yeah, so Dave is a very good friend of mine, and I'd got to know him through hiking and things like that. And you know, I was unemployed when I arrived in Cape Town again at the age of 58, and didn't know what I was going to do. We'd handed over the care center and pretty much starting again. And I knew I couldn't just go and retire. You know, I needed to be doing something. And so Dave, I approached Dave one day and I said, you know, I love the idea of life coaching. And he said to me, Ray, I've got bad news for you. He said, I don't think you got the skills to be a life coach. So I said, why? He said, because you talk far too much. He said, life coaches don't do that. They kind of head guys in a direction and then they. So he said to me, he'd actually driven buses before in his previous kind of career. And he said to me, I think you'd be a great life coach. I mean, a great tour guide. So I thought, okay, I'll go get the badge and be a tour guide. I knew nothing about the industry or how to go about this. All I knew is that I was passionate about my country, and I talked a lot. So so that seemed to be the...
And I want to pause you there because you said you just knew that you're at the age of 60 and you wanted to carry on. And, of course, there are two reasons.
Yes.
The main one is because of the value that you still want to bring.
Absolutely.
But secondly, of course, there's the financial side.
Yeah.
And, you know, many people reach retirement age and whatever retirement funding they've put behind them is going to be inadequate. The statistics say that.
Correct.
So it's not a bad thing to consider a side hustle or a second career.
Absolutely.
And that's what you did. In your case, it was probably the third or fourth career.
Yes, yeah, it was. It was. And that was absolutely true, Steve. You know, I got to that age and I realized, no, I need to carry on in terms of income. But at the same time, exactly what you said, you know, I kind of feel like I've been blessed in terms of what I've done in the past, you know, and I felt like there's something I can add to other people's lives. And it's an incredible opportunity to do that.
Super, super. I wanted to pause because it's important for our listeners to hear that, you know, there are different motivations.
Sure.
Then in going into this, you like you started to say, you thought it was a cakewalk. And then what did you discover about the tour guiding industry?
So, Steve, I really thought I'm just going to go and, you know, apply for this badge and get the tour guide badge and become a tour guide. But if I'd known what I knew, I may not have taken it on, but sometimes that's better. You know, it's like, so anyway, so I've discovered I actually had to go to a tour guide school. And I literally went to classes and started to learn about guiding. And then I found out I had to actually go and do my own research as well, which ended up in a big A4 lever arch file that was thick. That was a portfolio of evidence to show them that I know enough about the country that I can be a competent guide. So that was the second step, you know, the classes and then that.
And time-wise, what is the time?
Yeah, so it was altogether was about 3 months, which doesn't sound that long, but it was, you know.
I
literally had to go into classes in town, so it took effort to get there. You know, it's like I had to be committed to that. And then the other thing was the last thing they said, you have to do a 3-hour closed book exam. And Steve, I haven't done that in like 35 years, you know, like that was scary.
So that was challenging and scary. Yeah.
And if I'd say my wife was the motivator because she said to me, you've done all this stuff now, you've put in all the effort, go do the exam. You know, literally the night before I nearly pulled out. I said, no, I better go do it. And the pass mark is 75% and it's closed book, you know, completely from memory. And, you know, when we get into silverpreneurship, I tell people my disc is full. So I've either got to take it out and replace it.
You look like you're buffering there.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Anyway, so I went and did the exam, and I ended up getting over 90%, you know, which kind of shocked me. But at the same time, I knew I'd put in the work, you know. So it was just a case of hoping I'd remember this stuff. So yeah, then I qualified, and to get the badge, it's actually a government
qualification
as well. So yeah. So then you've got to apply for the badge. You've got to do it through the government, and then you obviously get the badge. You know, so now I had the badge, and I didn't know anybody, and I had to start being a tour guide. You know, so
what year was this about?
So that was 2016.
Okay.
So, yeah, and which is, as we all know, you know, COVID came in 2020. So 2016, here's how I got my first job, Steve, is that I'd come up with a logo, and I call it Epic Golf and Tours. And I put the logo on my Facebook page, and one of my friends who was an ex-Rhodesian was now in Australia. He lived there 30 years, and he had six golfer friends that wanted to come to South Africa. Well, he wanted to bring them, but they were all a bit afraid of coming to South Africa, these Australians. Anyway, so he convinced them to come, and he said, can you put a tour together? I didn't know anybody. I didn't know the industry. And I said, sure, I can.
Now, let me pause you there, too. Yeah. An entrepreneur
yes.
will see the size of the opportunity
absolutely.
And then say, yes, and then figure out how to do it.
Absolutely.
Listeners, just consider that. Don't be intimidated by the size of the problem,
yep.
but rather be influenced by the size of the opportunity,
100%.
Which is what you did.
100%. It's like we're not going to know, you know, if we wait until we know everything to take the first step, we won't take it. So we've got to take the first step, and then the stuff comes together. You know, it's like so anyway, so that's what happened. The seven of them came over. These six Australians that were actually petrified. Because of, you know, what they hear in Australia about South Africa. And they had the most incredible time. I took them up the garden route. I took them to places I'd never been to before. And they were absolutely blown away. You know, and the beer was cheap. The food was cheap. The golf courses were fantastic. And so anyway, so that was kind of my baptism into the industry. And, you know, even though I'd done that, there were still quite a few hurdles.
Yeah,
along the way, you know. So, but that kind of bit me, you know. I said I can do this. So I think sometimes that just that one little success can be the thing that keeps you going.
I think that's really, really super there.
Yeah.
So fast forward a little bit.
Yeah.
Because then you'd started to get regular clients.
Yes.
And then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And, of course, the tourism industry just went into massive hard lockdown.
Absolutely.
And what did you do? How did you navigate that?
It was very difficult, Steve, because I thought, okay, now I've taken on this thing and I'm actually doing quite well at it, you know, and then obviously COVID changed everything for everybody. And what actually happened to me is that, you know, as you can hear, I'm a storyteller, and that's why tour guiding's well suited to me. But yeah. I'd come across a few Rhodesians that have moved all over the world, and they pretty much said that they can't tell these stories, because if they tell these stories somewhere else, people don't believe them. Number one, because our life up there was extraordinary. It was very different, you know. And so that people stopped telling their stories. So I said, no, that's nonsense. So I started a little Facebook page with 15 people. And it's now 9,500 people on that page.
Goodness
and me. Pretty much it was Rhodesians that had moved to other parts of the world that were saying, we want to tell our story.
Just let me pause you again, Ray.
Sure.
So this was during COVID.
Yes. So COVID just
and
stopped.
And so you saw something and you started with 15 people?
Yes.
And now it has?
9,500 people.
9,500. And, of course, there are repercussions in that network that you've built.
Absolutely.
As well. Which leads me to another thing about you.
Yes.
You know, you do love telling stories, but you wrote a book.
Yes.
And you got another book on the offing. And
this...
All these stories that you've helped to collect,
yes.
is that the second book that you helped to compile?
Correct, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so, and because, we all have a story, Steve, you know, like, and everybody's story is different to somebody else's. And we think our story is not important, but when you actually write it down or you tell the story, you realize you're actually impacting other people, you know. It's something that you've gone through. They think they're the only ones that have ever gone through it. And then they realize, okay, I'm not the only one, you know. So,
Which reminds me of a little analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asked, "What is the most expensive land in the Cape. And, you know, someone said, oh, Clifton or Bantry Bay, etc. And then this person said, no, it's the cemetery. Because that's where people go and they've not sung that song. They've not written that book. They've not lived out what they could have.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that's a bit melodramatic. But if I may just highlight something, and that is, you said everybody's got a story inside of them.
Absolutely.
And let's not think that when you hit the age of 60, Silver Pioneer Richard, when you hit that age, that the story ends. In fact, you are probably, listeners, equipped more than ever to write a very authentic, very relevant story.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that relevance,
Ray.
Thankfully, you navigated COVID with all its stuff.
Yes.
And you've grown your own business.
Yes.
That's lovely to see.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about some lessons that you've learned as a business owner and an entrepreneur. And I always like to make the distinction, they're not necessarily the same thing. But tell us some of the stories, the lessons that you've learned there, Ray.
So probably one of the biggest lessons for me, Steve, has been the Afrikaans word. You know, I think Afrikaans sometimes has a very expressive means to it. And the Afrikaans word fussbait.
Fussbait.
Is probably
English grit.
Yes.
Grit.
So it's probably one of my favorite words, you know, and that's probably one of the biggest things I've had to learn. Obviously in my life, but more so with, you know, since
within
I took up
business.
Guarding, because of the whole thing of the interruption of COVID and thinking, okay, because at one stage I thought, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this. In 2022, it was very quiet in Cape Town, even after things started lifting. And I thought, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to carry on.
Is this viable anymore?
Yeah, is it viable? And can I make enough out of it to, you know, have
justify it?
Justify it. And here's the thing, it's the cake before COVID in Cape Town or South Africa. The tourism cake was this big, you know, so I know the listeners can't hear that, but it was massive.
Yeah.
And then COVID came and the cake shrunk to a tenth of the size. And so now you've got all these guys. So right now, we've got 16,000 guys that are registered as guides in Cape Town alone.
Mm.
No, look, not all of them are working. Some of them have bailed out and, you know, it's like, but right now the people going through the training, they're on 16,000 something.
Sure.
And I was 9,000 in 2016.
So another 7,000.
Yeah, so
in the
now
last
you've got
of
all of those guys now fighting over that smaller cake, you know. So, and there were times that, you know, you thought you had a job, then the job fell through or whatever. And the thing of fussbait was very important for me. You know, just like I knew I had the skill to do this. The thing was just connecting the skill with being able to have people that I could actually, you know, show around. So, yeah, fussbait was a massive thing for me. And then second thing was the whole thing of patience, you know, just being patient. Because sometimes I think, and having a plan B, because plan A doesn't always work out, you know, and when plan A doesn't work out, we can't just throw our toys out the cot and say, well, now we're in trouble. You've got to find another way.
Mm. That's part of navigating and
absolutely say,
and being preemptive
and trying to think ahead and being adaptive. Sorry, that's the word I was looking for.
Adaptive,
you've got to be adaptive, you know. And so I've got an expression I use. I know you've asked me about this. Is that I've got a thing that I say every single morning when I get up, Steve, and it's blessed are the flexible, for they shall not be broken.
When they're put under pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it can. If you're not flexible, especially in this kind of industry, you know, I get so many different guests from all over the world with different cultures, different languages even, and different ideas of what they want to do. And even though you may have it on paper beforehand, when they arrive and you find out, this is what I want to go do,
it's different to what the script says.
So I can't say, okay, this is a Cape Peninsula tour. This is what we're going to do. Halfway through that, something changes.
And Ray, you're bringing out something that entrepreneurs need to live,
yes.
And that is you've got to make the customer's experience the top-notch thing.
Absolutely.
So if you come with a prepared thing and it doesn't quite meet that, they might accept it.
Absolutely.
But they won't go away feeling blown over by the experience.
Absolutely.
So that adaptiveness, that flexibility.
Absolutely.
Very, very important.
So, Steve, can I just say one thing on that? You know, I've got a byline for Epic Tour in South Africa, and that spectacular is the norm. And I say that because that's my aim. You know, and I mean that because I want at the end of the day, my bottom line in my guiding is that if somebody's come and they've been with me, when they go home, they're either going to say, I'm coming back again, or they're going to go tell a friend or a relative and say, you've got to go to South Africa.
Best marketing ever.
It's way better than anything I can write on a piece of paper or put on a social media.
Excellent.
So,
and that means that you've got to deliver at a very high level consistently.
Absolutely.
You know, you've got no room for off days and being moody or grouchy and where's my coffee, etc., and then I'll catch up. You've got to bring your A game all the time.
And Steve, here's the thing. I think you'd asked me this before. Is the whole thing is, and I may be ahead of myself, but the whole thing of that, if you're passionate about what you're doing, so, you know, my smile and my attitude to my guests when they come, this is not put on. You know, this is something I'm passionate about what I'm doing. And so, you know, and friends say to me, oh, no, you never work a day in your life because I'm really loving what I'm doing. And it then the people that I'm guiding, they actually see that. And, you know, like, and I'll say to them, this is the same Ray that my family see at home. And it's the same Ray that's on Facebook, you know,
and that's what I meant by the fact that you are authentic.
Yeah,
you are you.
Absolutely.
You know, I know that you, when the box lose, I know that you can be authentically cross and disappointed.
No.
But again, you carry a passion for the country, which is delightful to see.
Thank you.
And it is a mirror to the tourists that you take around.
Yep.
You know, of the amazing people that populate our country. You know,
absolutely.
The vast majority. The vast majority. So, want to ask you to close off with two things.
Yeah.
We all have these little mottos or these sayings that we go by. I know one of your ones was blessed are the flexible.
Yes.
What's another one? What's something that you kind of live by?
So Steve, I haven't got the whole quote in front of me, but there's a quote called, it's entitled Man in the Arena.
Yeah.
And it's Theodore Roosevelt. You know, he's known. There are other people that have been kind of said that they said it, but he's the guy that
he's the original.
Sure. Yeah, and I've seen the actual full speech. And the man in the arena basically is the whole thing of, you know, I'm not a sideliner kind of person. I can't sit on the stands and shout. You know, I've got to be in in the fight. So the man in the arena is basically that. You know, it's like we commit ourselves to something and we get in and we do the dirty work,
sure.
You know.
I think it says words like they're sweating and blood.
Exactly.
And, you know, they're not out there pointing fingers.
Absolutely.
They're there living it.
Feeling the pain, you know, because that's the thing, you know, and we spoke about it earlier, Steve. I don't want people to get the impression. You know, tour guiding is wonderful. I absolutely love it. You know, I'm passionate about it. But at the same time, there's another side to it that people don't see. You know, it's like, and you've got to take that. With the bad or with the good, you know, like that stuff, you've got to actually work through it and you get disappointments. You know, people aren't always that easy sometimes on tour. You know, 90% of the time it's wonderful. But, you know, and we've got a habit as people that sometimes we say we hear one bad thing and that can drag it down.
Yeah.
You know, meanwhile, you've got 90 good things that have been said.
What a profound thing.
Yeah. So,
So just again to translate that for our listeners, those who are in that category of 50 plus and they're thinking about starting their own business, one of the things that I would counsel that they hear what you said is do something that you are involved in, passionate about, that you love.
Absolutely.
I've said this before. My son, who is an international photographer, travel photographer, he says, Dad, I would pay someone to do this.
Yeah.
Meaning he would pay someone so that he could do it.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But then he also tells me about those, and I've seen it, those 16-hour days that he would have, those times when he would be absolutely lonely because he was traveling. He's not doing that too much anymore.
Yeah.
But the thing that kept him going
was
this passion, was this love.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Steve, just to relate to that as well, is at the beginning for me as well. You know, I, at the age of 60, after doing that course, I worked for 3 months for a big tour operator, and I won't mention names, but what happened is I was getting up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and driving through to town and picking up a vehicle, a Quantum, and picking up 12 people in 5 different locations around Greenpoint and then going and doing my tour, you know. So, and then sometimes getting home at 11 o'clock at night, going back to bed, getting up at 5 the next morning. So, you know, it was tough, you know.
And that, little glamour with that.
Exactly. And now, you know, obviously like your son, it's not quite like that anymore, you know, but I had to put in the hard yards at the beginning. So
listeners, don't be afraid of the sweat and even the tears.
Yeah.
You know, remember, failure is never final. And it is not a person, it's an event.
Correct.
And failures and mistakes are part of the journey of entrepreneurship.
Absolutely.
One final word from you or sentence from you, Ray. If there are people who are considering starting up their own business, what's one parting piece of that silver wisdom that you can share that they can take and maybe on board? Where do they start? What would you encourage them to do?
Okay, my first thing, and that will always be my top thing, Steve, is the passion. You know, what you said earlier, find something that you, even though I'd never done guiding, I knew that I loved my country. So that was my starting point, you know. Okay. So find something that you're passionate about, because in those bad times, the passion will carry you. You know, when those tough things come. Very much in the field or something that you would love to be doing. And, you know, there's that saying as well, that if you find something you're passionate about, you'll never work a day in your life.
Except you'll probably work harder, but you'll do
exactly. But you're going to love it. You know, so the journey will be very different, because it really does. You know, you get up in the morning thinking, I want to go do this. It's not like a task, where sometimes in some of the jobs that you may have had before, it was sunny to put food on the table, and you could do it, but it wasn't fun, you know. So,
No, absolutely.
So it doesn't have to be guarding whatever somebody's passionate about. If they do that, they're going to have fun.
Ray, it's been a joy to have you with us. Thank you so much. You helped us to laugh a little bit. Richard, I just want to remind the listeners that next year early, I want to carry on with this theme by hosting a workshop for those who might want to be starting up a second career, a second act in their lives. And so January, February, we'll start to put that information out. Okay. And if any of the listeners want to find out more about that, we'll be sharing that in the new year.
Okay.
Also, I'll be posting to you, Richard, or to Janet, the article that I wrote about Ray, so that the listeners can also connect with that as well.
Well, it'd be nice to put that onto the podcast as a link. I'll do that this evening.
Fantastic.
In your conversation, Ray, I sat and listened, and there are two questions I have.
Yeah.
Or one observation, one question. The observation is this, that you started out thinking about a direction that you thought was for you, and the key element in where you are now versus where you were is that you spoke to somebody who gave you an honest opinion.
Absolutely.
And you took their advice. Absolutely. Had it not been for that friend,
Absolutely.
You may have ended up in the same place, but it may have taken a different route.
Absolutely.
So sometimes when your friends, your close friends, say something to you that you may feel is hurtful,
yeah,
sometimes it's worth not getting hurt and sitting down and analyzing that.
Feedback is not silver, it's gold.
Yes, absolutely. Then the question is this, and it was a throwaway comment right at the beginning of, and it doesn't relate to the main body of content that you gave us this afternoon. But you said you were an airline, a pilot.
Yes.
No flying after that. Was there no passion for
and that's such a great point, Richard, because what happened is, I said earlier, all I ever did at school was sport and people. And so I was going to be a phys ed teacher. So I went into the war because this guy convinced me three very good reasons. He said, number one, you're going to get paid $95 Rhodesian dollars a month. And I had no money. And then number two, you can play as much sport as you like in the Air Force because we encourage. Number three, girls love guys in blue uniforms.
There you were.
So when the war was over, the flying was incredible. You can imagine at that age in a war. Mm. When the war was over, I said, that's it, I'm done. And flying was never really a passion when I was growing up. Sport and teaching always was. So here's the interesting thing, Richard, and it's a great question, is that I'm ended up now at the age of 60, that I've actually realized right through my career, different careers, I've actually always taught, but it's not been in a formal setting. And here I am as a tour guide now, teaching people from outside our country about our country. So it's just, the format's different. I would probably not have survived in a classroom because I'm not that kind of person, but I'm teaching. So it's a great observation.
I find that interesting because a lot of people would break a leg to.
I know. I've had friends say to me, "How did you give up flying? And it was all paid for."
Yeah.
So I said, "Well, there wasn't my passion." And it goes back to the passion thing.
And that's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe you're doing something that you're not passionate about, and there is something that you are passionate about, and it's worth considering if you're getting to that age of retirement that you just need to take that plunge and go with it. Steve.
And the question is, why not?
Yeah.
Can I add one thing to that as well, Richard? Is sometimes whatever your passion is, it may not seem like a lucrative thing. I'm talking about financially.
Oh, tell me about it.
And you will get the naysayers that will say, "But how are you gonna
survive?"
I've learned not to listen. I listen to key people, but there's a lot of stuff that I just filter it out, because if I listened to that, I probably would never have got into this,
Amazing. I'd love to put the article onto the podcast. When the book comes out, we'd love to have you back to talk about that.
Great.
I think that would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Thank you so much,
Fantastic.
Steve. Thank you so much for being in this afternoon. As our guest, Ray. And Steve, I want to wish you all the best for the festives, because this is the last one.
For this year.
And you're going to hopefully take a break, because I know that you also don't slow down sometimes. So have a great break, and we'll touch base again next year.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners. Wonderful to be with you.